You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the Ready Room, show number 81, Faldorian Fight Scene. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including the full slate of Enterprise Blu-ray extras, TrekWeb's campaign to restore Star Trek V, a full-length movie release of The Best of Both Worlds, Star Trek sports logos, a new Botany Bay print from Bye Bye Robot, and some movie news and rumors. Then in the feature, we're joined by Charlene Schmidt and Drew Stewart to discuss Journey to Babel. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week?
Chris, it is with a heavy heart that I join you today, for my mighty Seahawks have been defeated in battle by the evil Atlanta Falcons. Radagast Giant Eagles were nowhere to be found, and they were smote upon the mountainside.
Well, as I told you in the other side of the room, you never know what's going to happen when two big birds start fighting with one another in the sports ball. So I hope that you will be able to carry on through the show and remember that if an Andorian had been fighting those Falcons,
he
would have won.
I'll take your blood to Andorra.
He definitely will. I'll take your blood to New Orleans.
Well, what else has been happening there, Greg?
Well, we had an epic observation lounge over the weekend. I don't know if you've had a chance to listen to it, but we had the Oscar nominations, and I had a super time for 2 hours. You know, it's supposed to be an hour-long show, but we extended the show to 2 hours because we just couldn't stop talking. So now I definitely understand how Larry and John felt last week talking about Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, the whole time I was picturing it being on Japanese television, and you've got right up there, you've got that, the observation lounge, Nijikan Special, right up there on the screen.
Exactly.
There's this show here. It's always a two-hour special right up there on the screen. The show's always 2 hours. You should put 1 hour special when it's half the normal length. It's not special. It's always 2 hours. But
it's always special, Chris.
In your case, this was a special show.
It was, yes. So had a lot of fun doing that. Also, last week, I finished Mass Effect, which was fantastic. And for the Trek nerds out there, I finished at level 47.
Well, that's perfect. I'm looking forward to the Abrams first game when it comes out because it looks like it's going to have at least some of that Mass Effect feel to it.
Yes, it looks like it. I'm really, really hoping because that's all I want out of video games is a Mass Effect game that is instead Star Trek because it's like, okay, Asari and Vorcha and all this stuff. Can we just have Romulans and Vulcans and Tellarites and Hortas and all these things? That's really all I want.
I've seen other people saying the same thing. It would be nice if someone would listen. Maybe BioWare can get a license and actually do that. It would be really cool.
Yeah, but it looks close to it. So I guess we still have a couple months to wait. But yes, if we can play co-op Star Trek and it feels like Mass Effect, I'm going to be having one of the largest nerdgasms that has ever been nerdgasmed.
Wow, even bigger than the time when Will Wheaton retweeted you? Because
possibly,
that went on for like a week.
It might equal the Will W. retweet.
Okay. Everyone brace yourselves. All right. Well, let's jump into news. We're going to start off again with something. I know we've talked about it for the past couple of weeks, but we're going to start off with the Enterprise Season 1 Blu-ray set again. The reason is that it's now officially available for pre-order. And
Woo.
I actually did pre-order it the other day, so I have my copy lined up. And the list price turned out to be $119.99 instead of $129.99. So they're giving
you
a $10 break because it's Enterprise.
Right, but it's still awfully expensive. The actual Amazon price, though, is lower, right?
It was, but it's still pretty high. It's $83.99. Now, the reason I went ahead and pre-ordered it at $83.99 is because I'm very confident that the price will come down to like $59, something around,
right,
something like that by the time it's released. So I'll actually only pay that part. And I just wanted to, you know, put my pre-order in, show the studio that, yes, we are looking forward to this.
Yeah. I still need to pick up, to my shame, TNG Season 2. I was put off by the Amazon price jumping, and then the fact that I couldn't find it at any retailer. I have a hard time paying the full price when I knew that it was less, and I still have to wait for it to come. But so there's a two big purchases I need to make, hopefully in the next month. And I would like to see this price come down a bit before I actually pull the trigger. $83.99 is still an awful lot for a show you can get for free on Netflix.
It is. For me, I'm buying it more for the extras than the actual episodes because, you know, I can watch the episodes in HD on Hulu here.
Yeah.
Now that it's officially available on Amazon, they listed the full contents of the discs. So last week we talked about three announced, or at least announced via Twitter, extras that were going to be on the set. But now we have quite a few, and I thought we'll just run down these real quick so everyone knows what they can look forward to. Of course, audio commentary on select episodes, it doesn't tell us which episodes, so we'll have to wait and see what that is. Text commentary as well, deleted scenes. So we're finally going to be able to see Jeffrey Combs' appearances in every episode of Enterprise because he's always there.
He is everywhere.
But he's not necessarily on screen in the episode as we see it. So that's going to be nice to have.
I have heard there's some good deleted scenes out there for Enterprise. I don't know if I've seen any of them, but I've heard there's some really good stuff that ended up on the cutting room floor.
Well, yeah, you know, that decontamination rubdown scene. The end of that scene, they just couldn't leave it on network television. So I'm looking forward to that.
Right. Oh, goodness. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they find. Maybe Shuttle Pod 1 can be even longer with even more scenes of just two guys sitting in one set.
Right. 17 extra minutes of Shuttle Pod 1. but they're going to have cast introduction, the Rick Berman, Brandon Braga conversation piece, which I think we mentioned last week. It says network presentation and syndication presentation. And I don't know exactly what that means other than, of course, when shows are syndicated, often they start cutting bits of the show out so that they can put more commercials in. If you've ever watched Seinfeld on DVD, you get back to the original broadcast episodes, which are 2 to 3 minutes longer than the ones that you typically watch in rerun syndication these days.
And that's really true of like MASH, which is a good 10 minutes longer on DVD. Is that what it means? I was a little confused. Like, are they actually going to put the cut syndication episode? One thing I was thinking of is, I believe the stupid third season music and the putting Star Trek on the title is done in season 1 and 2 in syndication.
Oh,
but again, it wouldn't make much. I believe that's true. It wouldn't make much sense to put that on the disc.
Yeah.
Perhaps it's the next week on, or the, you know, coming up on, that they've been putting on the TNG Blu-rays.
Could be. I was thinking also it could be a Blu-ray feature where you can toggle, kind of like on the TOS ones, you can toggle and you can see the original and you can see the remastered as you watch through. So who knows?
Yeah,
we'll find out. Listed as an extra. There's also on the set, there's a feature called To Boldly Go Launching Enterprise, Part 1 Countdown, Part 2 Boarding the NX-01, Part 3 First Flight. There are archival mission logs, Creating Enterprise, Oh, Captain, My Captain, a profile of Scott Bakula.
You know, I actually got Oh, Captain, My Captain by, what's her name, Ashley in Mass Effect.
Really?
I took to the Twitter. Did Ashley just Oh, Captain, My Captain me? This is out of line.
I think she did. What else do we have here? We have Cast Impressions Season 1. We have Enterprise Secrets, Star Trek Time Travel, Temporal Cold Wars, and Beyond. This one sounds interesting to me. Maybe we'll get some new information behind the whole, we've got to make this show feel futuristic. Why don't we have a Temporal Cold War?
Yeah, I'd love to hear some, whatever we call it, frank or candid interviews with Brandon Braga where he talks about what led to that. Hopefully also some detail on the whole Archer is future guy thing that happened on Twitter and has been rumored for years. I'd love to hear some clarification on where that was going and why that was decided and then why it was dropped.
That would be very nice. That's the kind of stuff that they need to bring to this set, I think, to make it unique and make it something that fans will want to buy. We also have Admiral Forrest takes center stage inside Shuttle Pod 1. So there you go. There's that extra extended Shuttle Pod 1 you're looking for, I think.
That's just a camera they had set up so we get to see Dom and Connor between takes.
Oh, so it's literally inside Shuttle Pod 1. It's the security camera that's just mounted up in the corner. I see.
We get to hear them talking about Jolene Blaylock between takes. It's a lot of fun.
I bet. And then there are Enterprise outtakes, the NX-01 files, and celebrating Star Trek. So that's what you can look forward to. So that's quite a lot of stuff there. Hopefully they're longer than a minute and 30 seconds a piece. I hope.
Yeah, sometimes that happens. The conversation between Berman and Braga, I hear, is longer, like half an hour or even an hour long. So that'll at least be something I'm really looking forward to. It's going to be a new feature. So it's going to be HD. It's going to be shot in 2012. And should have some really great information for fans of the show.
Oh, excellent. I'm looking forward to that. So go over to Amazon if you're interested in pre-ordering. Like we said, the price right now is a bit high. I am very confident that it's going to come down significantly based on what happened with TNG Season 1 and 2. And get your hands on it.
Yeah.
So, Greg, what do we have up next in news?
Well, so Enterprise may be the most underrated or the least rated of Star Trek shows. The least rated of the Star Trek movies, of course, would be Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, which I actually, there are people who love this movie. Like, they really love it. They don't just ironically love it, and they don't just love the potential. They love the final product. And people out there are so much in love with the movie that I hear there is a campaign to restore it for the upcoming anniversary.
There is. Hard to believe that The Final Frontier will be celebrating its 25th anniversary next year. That means it's been 25 years since we were informed why they were putting seatbelts in theaters that summer.
Yes.
But TrekWeb is spearheading a campaign to encourage Paramount and CBS to release a remastered director's edition on Blu-ray to commemorate the anniversary. I think this plays into the people who like the potential of the film, though, Greg.
This is true. Like what they want is to be able to give William Shatner the raw footage and computer graphics and a budget. And say, given all this stuff and 25 years of hindsight, what sort of movie would you make out of this? And I don't know if there'd be a CG rock monster fight. And I guess they could just slot in the one from Galaxy Quest. But it's possible you could make a better movie out of it, given some time and thought. I don't know if William Shatner is in any sort of place where he'd want to do that, though.
Well, I don't know. He's looking for something to do all the time these days.
He's hard at work on Wackadoodle right now, so I'm not sure.
Oh, that's true.
I'm sure Wackadoodle is taking an awful lot of his time. No, but I would be very excited to see this. The director's cut of Star Trek One, the motion picture, is really good. I was actually distressed that the Blu-ray I bought was not the director's cut. It's the original theatrical cut, which is just not as good. Like, they did a really, really good job not only restoring it and enhancing the effects, but also cutting some dead weight and really making the film flow a lot better.
I think they could improve it a bit with some more remastering and redoing the visual effects. The thing for me with this movie, and I don't hate Star Trek V, but I will acknowledge that it is, for me, the weakest of all of the Star Trek movies. The problem for me is highlighted in a quote here from screenwriter David Lowery, and it comes from a talk he had with Edward Gross in 1990. And he says, "I look at Star Trek V with mixed emotions. The effects turned out to be very disappointing, and this was a movie that we really needed them to put us over the top story-wise." And that's kind of the thing for me, is that it doesn't matter how good the effects are in the movie. If the story isn't there, you can't cover it up with effects.
Right.
And I almost feel like what he's saying here is that we didn't really get there with the story, so we needed better visual effects to cover that up, and we didn't get those visual effects, and so everything fell apart.
Yep. Yeah, and that's a pity, and it comes down to a lot of William Shatner saying it should be done this way and not that way, and it just ended up being kind of a mess. It sort of reminds me of Prometheus in a way, that there were some really great screenwriters on it, but the fact that the director wanted to make a movie that no one really wanted to see caused it just to turn out to be like, okay, what was that? And it's kind of disappointing. But I still, I mean, if you look at that script that he wrote, I don't think it's a bad script. Even the film that's there is not a bad film. So something does need to be done with Star Trek V. I don't know if a full director's cut is quite necessary, but sure, let's give it a nice, you know, Blu-ray release and maybe redo some of the effects just to bring it up to snuff. Could we cut out Uhura singing naked? Could we just snip that whole bit out of the film?
Right. Which is not even Nichelle in the end, right?
It's not, right.
The singing part.
I don't think either part of it is her. It's just random singer, random stand-in. I don't know why we bothered.
Well, no, the dancing, that's George Takei up there, right?
Could we do that for the remastered version? Quick, Sulu, cause a distraction.
Yes, sir.
That would be awesome. So I guess for me, bottom line on this is that I do think the story had potential. It could have been a good story. I felt that the direction, the vision that Shatner had of the story that was captured on film, for me, didn't work. And so I don't think that remastering the existing film footage is going to fix that, because it's what he saw through his eyes and captured on film. And for me personally, creatively, it didn't work. And nevertheless, I would be more than happy to see them attempt to do a remastering and put this on Blu-ray.
Well, yeah, I'd love to see that. I mean, sure, a remake is what we would need to make it a really good film. But yeah, I'd love to see this petition succeed and see something be done.
So if you agree that you would like to see it done, you can, of course, go over to trekweb.com to get more information, and we'll put a link in the show notes. But what they're asking people to do is they're asking you to write or call Paramount Pictures. It's 5555 Melrose Avenue, Los Angeles, California. That is in the United States. Apparently, it's listed in the address here. And it's 90038. So send them a letter if you would like. And it says if you have any questions or concerns, you can email gl2000, that's 2000, at uol.com.br. And throw your support behind this campaign.
Yeah. And if you do want to join the group that are sending painted llamas to Paramount Pictures, we will have a link to that address on the website.
And painted horses as well.
Yes. Everything will be painted.
We're going to spend a lot of money on that blue paint. They should just remaster it. Just put a blue filter over the entire movie.
Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect. Let's paint William Shatner while we're at it.
Now, Greg, we started off the show talking about sports ball, and I was looking around the other day, and I came across some very interesting Star Trek sports ball logos that have been created.
Yes, I saw that you put these in. These are pretty good. We have the Starfleet Cadets, the Jem'Hadar Zealots, and it's the Red Shirt Expendables. And they're great
logos.
That one
I really like.
Yes. Because they're just getting zapped and zapped.
For me, the Red Shirt Expendables, this team, it's like the 1AA, or what they now call the FCS teams in college football.
Right.
The lower division teams that all the big guns bring in, pay them a bunch of money so that they can beat them up 72-0 and get that W, and then move on to the next week. That's who in this Star Trek sports ball league, that's who the Red Shirt Expendables really are.
Yes, absolutely. Well, so this got me thinking about what sort of other teams we'd really love to see. Of course, there's the Bajor Orbs that can go up against the Andor Antennas in some sort of championship match.
You know, the Andor Antennas, it's interesting that they face some restrictions that aren't placed on other teams. They are actually forced to wear, even the coaches are forced to wear helmets on the sideline. The helmets are designed to dampen the antenna so that they cannot transmit their plays, you know, between the press box and the field. So it's against league regulations and rules, and they would just have an unfair advantage.
Well, I mean, when you have the quarterback, you know, going off during timeout to have an orb vision, you know, I just don't think the prophets should be allowed to guide the team to victory.
They really shouldn't. I mean, that's just, it's not fair, you know? I mean,
it's really
kind of like, yeah, it's just not.
Well, and speaking of teams that, you know, are getting an unfair advantage, you have the Borg Collective, who, you know, they don't even have scrimmages. They just all are thinking in unison. I don't know how they've lost a single championship.
Have they? I thought they were the perennial champion of the Star Trek Sports Ball League.
Well, there was that one time that the refs really ruled against them an awful lot, but then they just assimilated all the refs. And the replacement refs have been really lenient.
I wonder why. There's also that Vulcan team called Hot Finger Action. And it's really weird when they're playing, because as they broadcast the games, there's always this kind of digital mosaic over the players' hands, because the stuff they're doing on the field, that they need to just go get a room.
Speaking of unsportsmanlike conduct. Oof.
So anyway, there's a whole collection of these sports balls logos that have been created, and they were done by an illustrator named Mitch Palmer, and he did a really nice job with these. He's a designer in Philadelphia, and if you want to check them out and his other work, go over to Behance.net. If you're not familiar with Behance, it's this really great community for designers. It's kind of like a social network in a way, a place where you have portfolios as well. But Behance.net/Mitch Palmer, M-I-C-H Palmer, and check out his other work. Some really cool stuff there.
Very cool. And while we're talking about great Star Trek art, I wanted to mention this piece from Bye Bye Robot that was actually just announced. It's by Mark Breyer, and it's of the Botany Bay. And I know, Chris, you've seen these Bye Bye Robot prints before, and they're just incredible. This one is one of the best ones I've ever seen.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now, and it is beautiful. And like you said, I actually have a Bye Bye Robot poster right over here in the studio.
Yeah.
The Take Your Shore Leave on Risa that the Trek FM crew sent me as a gift, which was wonderful, because they can't ship them internationally.
I forget the name of that artist. He does some amazing, amazing work. It's actually being shown at an art gallery here in Seattle. He's done ones like that for Star Wars, Star Trek. A coffee shop I saw had like 8 of them from Firefly, and it's all that guy. So yeah, Bye Bye Robot and this guy have some amazing posters. And this one, I really would like to have. It's a really nice profile shot of the Botany Bay with the Enterprise in the background. It's an excellent composition. The colors are wonderful. The font choice is great. I couldn't recommend it enough.
The Risa poster was actually done by Steve Thomas.
That's right.
He's the artist there. Yeah, Steve Thomas. So really great stuff. And like you said, yeah, this one here by Mark Breyer is beautiful too. And as is always the case with Bye Bye Robot, it's $25. Most of the posters they've been putting out recently, $25. And it's just a complete steal at that price.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're really good quality. You know, I've got that the Risa one over here, and very pleased with the quality of the printing, the paper. Very nice stuff they're producing there. So, yeah, this just came out as we were recording,
right?
I believe. And so quickly we pulled this story in. We'll put a link in the show notes. And StarTrek.com has some information on it, and you can go take a look over there. So, Greg, let's take a break from news here for a moment and thank our sponsor, Squarespace. And I've been hearing from a number of our listeners that they have been checking out Squarespace and really loving the tools there. We've talked about various features in Squarespace over the past few weeks, whether you want to do a blog, as many of our listeners want to do because they just want to write about their daily lives or Star Trek or other things they're interested in, or if you want to build a full-blown website. And what I wanted to talk about today is building a full-blown website. And it's easy if you go to Squarespace because the system is so simple. And they have all these beautiful pre-made templates that you can just take and you can hit the ground running and you can have a new site up in a matter of minutes. But if you are a developer, another wonderful thing about Squarespace is that they have a full-blown developer mode where you can get full FTP access and you can get full control over the website the same way that you would be accustomed to building a website traditionally. But you have all that power of Squarespace at your disposal as well.
Yeah, one of our listeners asked us on Twitter what template you used for Trek FM. And I was wondering, did you use a template or did you just use the Squarespace tools to create something from scratch?
I actually started out with a template. I can't remember the name of it at this point in time because it was several years ago. And at that point in time in Squarespace, you did not have the ability to have full control like you can now with the new full-on developer mode that they have. So I started with a template, but I heavily, heavily modified that template, and I renamed it Excelsior. And so
nice.
The current Trek FM template is called Excelsior, but it's only available to me because I created it. But, you know, it's an interesting point that I did start with a template. And when we were talking to Squarespace about sponsoring Trek FM, they looked at our site and they said, wait, are you sure this site is built on Squarespace?
Oh, wow.
So even they were not certain at the beginning that our site was built 100% on Squarespace because we had modified the original template so much. But yeah, that's the power of Squarespace. That's how you can take these tools and you can use those to create something that's completely unique.
That's very cool. Yeah, I love everything I see about Squarespace. You know, some of my podcasts I listen to are also sponsored by Squarespace. And I hear, you know, just everybody talk about how great it is. People making, you know, personal blogs or people making full-blown like podcast networks or, you know, commercial sites. Everyone really loves the tools that Squarespace gives them. I couldn't recommend it enough. Anytime somebody asks me, you know, what should I use? And I say, you know, if you absolutely need something free, okay, but you really should at least try out Squarespace. You know, they give you that free trial. I think you're really going to see the difference.
You do. That you have to try it because once you put your hands on these tools, then you'll understand why everyone is raving about Squarespace. So again, if you want to build a full-blown website and you need full developer access, Squarespace gives you complete control over every line of HTML, CSS, and JavaScript on your site. You can use every template in their Git repository. They have version controls, which are standard, which is really important. You know, when you make a change to a page and it saves the last version, and so you can roll back. It's very important in development. You can connect via Git or SFTP. You can have access to JSON templating, and everything's even Retina ready, which is very important these days. And what's wonderful about developer mode is that developer accounts never expire while in development. So you can go in there, you can set up your developer account, you can take as much time as you need before you launch your site, and you don't pay anything until you do, because Squarespace is so confident that you can build any kind of site that you need to build on this platform, and it's going to be beautiful.
So do they have some sort of deal still going on for our listeners?
They absolutely do. So we want you to go and try out Squarespace, and you can use it for 14 days absolutely free, no matter what you want to build. And at the end of that, you can choose to sign up for the basic package for $8 a month, which gives you pretty much everything that you need. But if you want more, they have an unlimited package that's only $16 per month. And if you use code TREK1, you can get 10% off that purchase. That's just for Trek FM listeners. So go to squarespace.com/trek and use offer code TREK1 and try out Squarespace. You'll absolutely love it.
So, Chris, we've been wondering what exactly CBS was going to do with the season 3 theatrical event that we're kind of assuming is still going to happen. They did it for season 1. They did it for season 2. We've got the season 3 Blu-ray coming out not too far away. And they dropped a bit of a surprise on us, because not only are we getting Best of Both Worlds Part 1 included in the season 3 Blu-ray, they're also releasing a standalone Best of Both Worlds feature-length Blu-ray presentation that includes Part 2 as well in one seamless whole, which I don't believe has ever even been aired. Like, this is a new thing they've put together.
No, it's never been aired. I remember the cliffhanger and getting to the end of the Best of Both Worlds Part 1 and Riker saying fire and the black screen, and then waiting all summer to find out if your dream was coming true, Greg, that Patrick Stewart was being written off the show. And
Yes. Well, I dreamed a dream, but it turned out that at the end of the day, it did not work out. I was very disappointed. I guess now that big dramatic moment when you're watching the feature length will be kind of lame, because it'll be like, fire! And then Worf would be like, it didn't do anything. Okay, moving on with the episode.
Yeah. Yeah, you were watching, you were hoping to be left with empty chairs at empty tables, but at the end of the day, Picard was still sitting there in that chair. So this is interesting. I'm glad they're doing it. I'm very excited to see it. I believe it was Landrieu who brought up on Twitter, how are they going to stitch these two together? Like, how are they going to explain that Worf's hair suddenly changes a few seconds later? I don't know.
That's going to be interesting, because it's clearly a new season. Like, it's not like the costumes change. Most of the changes, they wait till the next episode to really bring them in. But yeah, they change Worf's makeup. We'll probably just have to deal with it. What I'm mostly excited about is what I texted you immediately, which was, this is what they're going to play in the theater. Like, they're not going to bother with anything else in season 3. Right. It's going to just be Best of Both Worlds feature length, and that's going to be really cool.
Yeah, that's what they're going to do. So it's I don't know what they would change. You know, I don't know if there's extra footage to Best of Both Worlds that we don't know about that they could extend a little bit. I don't know if we're going to get to see what happened on Deck 8 when Shelby and Riker hung out after the poker game.
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
But this is exciting. I'm looking forward to this. And again, it says a standalone Blu-ray. So this is, of course, going to be on the season 3 Blu-ray sets, but then there's going to be just a Best of Both Worlds Blu-ray as well. What's going to be the incentive for us to buy the standalone?
I guess, like, people will have to deal with watching part 1 on one disc and part 2 on the other disc. Or if you're like me, I'm just going to watch part 1 and pretend that's all that ever happened with Best of Both Worlds. I don't know. Like, it's possible that they just believe the demand is there for, you know, not the diehard fans, but just people browsing say, oh, look, Best of Both Worlds feature length. I'll just pick that up for $10. Or, you know, they might be looking at selling it in syndication. You know, what would be better for, you know, some Sunday night than for CBS just to up and air Best of Both Worlds in blue, in, you know, high definition?
Well, this will be fun. And I have to say that being the Trek fan I am, I'm going to buy the season 3 Blu-ray set, and I'm probably going to buy this standalone Blu-ray as well. So it'll be fun. It'll be, and of course, I can't go to the theatrical event, so it'll be for me the only way I'll be able to see this. So
yeah,
now I am glad they're putting it out on Blu-ray.
Do we have the release dates for both season 3 and Best of Both Worlds?
Yeah, I've been seeing so far that the release date is going to be April 10th. So I believe that is confirmed. And for the US and Australia, I don't know about other places like Japan or UK at this point.
Yeah. And for the, I believe for the standalone disc, TrekCore has, you know, quote, confirmed that it'll be the same day. You'll be able to pick that up as well. And then probably an event sometime in late March or early April in the theater, although that's just speculation. That's pure speculation on our part so far, because there hasn't been any official, even rumblings about there being another event.
But there will be, and this is it.
So. Yes, I don't think there's any way that we're not correct.
From my heart and from my hand, why don't people understand my intention?
So, Greg, as we move into movie news and rumors, let's talk about some weird stuff here. And this is from Qualcomm. This is perhaps the weirdest press release that I've ever read for an iPhone application. This is the upcoming Star Trek Into Darkness iPhone app that was announced recently with, as I said, a very weird press release. Now, have you read this press release, Greg?
I have, and let me actually, let's run down what they actually said.
Paramount Pictures, a division of Viacom Incorporated and Qualcomm Incorporated, through its subsidiary Qualcomm Labs Incorporated, today announced that Gimbal Context Awareness Technologies will be used to deliver exclusive content and advanced real-world game experiences for the Star Trek Into Darkness application, based on the upcoming movie from J.J. Abrams. These cutting-edge technologies are being showcased in a never-before-seen way and will enable users to automatically engage with a wealth of movie-related materials by utilizing their real-life surroundings to auto-complete integrated missions by employing audio scan, geolocation recognition, and image recognition functionality powered by Qualcomm Vuforia.
Mommy, Blue!
The Star Trek Into Darkness app will launch at the end of January.
So what did they just say?
I have literally no idea what any of that meant.
Oh, my goodness. This came out, this was published by StarTrek.com as what looked like an article, and people started talking about it, and I think you sent me an iMessage, and I immediately replied. I said, that's just a press release written by someone in Qualcomm's marketing department that was published as an article, because that's just complete. That is our own 21st century technobabble going on right there.
Yeah, pretty much. I just engage with real life surroundings to auto complete mission experiences. I'm just waiting for them to reverse the polarity, and it'll start making sense. I was waiting for them to say that you could scan a QR code to do a barrel roll.
Do a barrel roll! The barrel roll! Press E or R!
That's an absolute must-have feature in any application that's related to Star Trek.
I think it definitely is.
Oh, man. I don't even know what to say about this application at this point, but I definitely wanted to share this with everyone. You know, to highlight it further, Dr. Paul E. Jacobs, who is the CEO of Qualcomm, was quoted as saying that we are excited about collaborating with Paramount on this app as it further brings to life Qualcomm's vision of the digital sixth sense, where devices intelligently interact with the world around you. Now, this is where you find out that everyone around you is dead, right?
Yes, I believe so. You just hold your smartphone up and use it to scan around you and you start seeing the ghosts. I don't even know.
You're like, what is it about me that people act like I'm not here? Oh, wait a minute, I'm dead. That's what you find out. You think people just don't like you. Turns out you're not really there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, maybe that's what happens in Star Trek Into Darkness.
Oh, that could be. Maybe Haley Joel Osment shows up with Bruce Willis, and it turns out that they were both detonated along with everything they stood for, even before the movie began. I hate to be Emperor Has No Clothing this, but it's been, you know, republished by pretty much everybody just as is. Like, this is something we're supposed to accept, that it makes any sense whatsoever. And it really doesn't, guys. This doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. It may, when the application actually comes out and we play with it, we might find out, oh, okay, now I see what this does. This is a cool application.
How about you say you get to hold your iPhone up during the Super Bowl ad and you get a wallpaper for your phone? Like, okay, maybe it doesn't sound exciting, but that's actually what you get to do.
Wait a minute, Greg. You mean hold it up during the big game?
I'm sorry. Because yes, the big game. Sorry.
I don't believe that we are officially authorized to refer to the big game as the Super Bowl game at the end of the NFL season.
I do apologize. We're going to have to cut this entire show out. Sorry about
there
that.
There was this place when I lived in Reno. They used to run, it was a restaurant, they would run ads for that, and they would say, you can come in and get a Super Bowl of chips and watch the big game.
Nice.
All right. Well, we'll find out what this is when it comes out, but it's a very bizarre looking thing here.
Yeah. I kind of wish that they'd done the same sort of thing when announcing who Benedict Cumberbatch was going to play. Just obfuscate the whole thing, you know. Benedict Cumberbatch will allow you to context awarenessly bio-configure your autocorrect villain.
Maybe it would have given us a better clue as to just what his powers are.
Yes.
All right. Well, Greg, that's not the only thing related to the movie that's coming out in January. Issue number one of IDW's Countdown to Darkness is going to be coming out now on January 23rd. And in what's for me kind of an unusual move is they're promoting that it's now available for pre-order. And while I get the idea of pre-ordering from your local comic shop,
yeah,
this is allowing you to pre-order it from the iBookstore for your iPad or iPhone. Now, why do you need to pre-order a digital comic book?
Well, iTunes has been doing this for years where you can pre-order your, you know, albums and movies and all the stuff. And it's just like, yeah, but I can click the button after it comes out, or I can click the button before it comes out. I don't actually see what the difference is.
Well, now, with albums, they usually give you some kind of extra. You get,
right.
You know, you get a music video, you get a couple of extra tracks, you can get a few of the tracks early, something like that. In this case, I don't know. I mean, like, do we get an extra character in the story that other people don't get if we pre-order?
They're not saying. So far, it's just pay $3.99 and here it is. Which is not terribly exciting. I wouldn't mind having a digital copy, though. Like, I love the idea of having digital comics. It's great that they're putting them in the iBook store, so that gives it a little bit higher publicity. You know, your average person doesn't know about Comixology, although you should. Download Comixology right now. Go do it. But most people don't. But they do have iBooks installed. So this is great to have another place for people to be able to read these comics.
Oh, most definitely. And I get all my Star Trek comics in digital. I go through Comixology, but I'll definitely be getting it there. But anyway, I just thought this was... I'm looking forward to the comic. I thought it was very odd that they're promoting that you can pre-order it in digital format. All right. Well, last thing, Greg, in movie news and rumors today, this is something we've talked about quite a bit. Our hopes that this next movie has a meatier story that's closer to the core ideals of Star Trek and Gene Roddenberry. And Brian Burke, talking to IGN, says that that is the case.
Yeah, he has some interesting stuff that he says. He says the film is not a dark film per se. It's not post-apocalyptic dark. It's still within the realm of what Roddenberry had wanted, which is this positive view of the future. However, the stakes are significantly greater and personal. So he's saying, yes, this is a darker film. Yes, London gets obliterated, apparently. But it's not post-apocalyptic Star Trek. This is not Star Trek Children of Men. It's still, you know, it's still your daddy's Star Trek. Although the thing they've been saying is this isn't your daddy's Star Trek. So I think they're trying to kind of play both sides of it.
It seems that way, but I'm glad, because I, as much as I love Star Trek, I don't want to just see an action movie, as we've talked about. So this sounds good to me. The other thing that he mentioned in here that I find interesting is that he says that Cumberbatch kind of made Harrison his own, particularly when we cast him. The writers went back and specifically tailored it for Benedict. And it just makes me wonder, because there's been all the speculation about, is it Khan, is it Khan, is it Khan? And then we look at who they were trying to cast originally. And it makes you wonder, was it originally full-on Khan? Did they then go back and did they make some changes to the villain to fit Cumberbatch? And so now it's not Khan, but it is Khan.
Yeah, I don't know. I listened again to our feature from last week, and I'm still not convinced that it's Cumberbatch. I actually am kind of hoping that they go with just he's Harrison and he's a terrorist. But yeah, I'm loving now seeing them talking about the film, getting out there, like their thought processes and talking about, you know, what Cumberbatch did to get into the mind of this character. You know, even if there's surprises out there, the things they're saying about Harrison sound great. It sounds like they've put a lot more thought into this villain than they have for villains in at least the last two Star Trek films.
We heard a bit about Spock's parents here and there through the first season of TOS, and of course, Sarika Vulcan became one of the most important characters in Star Trek, but it wasn't until DC Fontana wrote Journey to Babel that we actually were introduced to Sarek and Amanda. Today we're going to talk about that, and to help us do that, we have with us our TOS editor, Landru. Hello, Landru.
Hello, friends.
And we also have with us she who is my managing editor. It's Mistress Charlene Schmidt.
Hello.
You know, throughout this episode, Sarek refers to Amanda as she who is my wife.
Yes, yes.
Right?
Yes.
Just call her Amanda.
Or my wife.
Or my wife.
No, he keeps like extending his two fingers and be like, she who is my wife.
Yeah. Come here. I want...
Over here. Hello.
Yep. Hot phone connection right now in front of everybody. The whole time we're on camera.
They're not... Now, hold on. They're not Q. They're not, like, mating in front of us, people.
But Star Trek 3.
I don't know.
Star Trek... Star Trek 3. That's how it starts.
That's how it starts. There's hand holding, and then they go to second base, which is the stroking of the fingers.
Right, right.
Think about Kirk. There's that entire scene next to the computer where Kirk is standing there, and Sarek and Amanda, they're doing that finger thing the whole time he's talking to them, and they never stop. It's like they're just making out. He's trying to show them the computer. They're making out in front of him the whole time, and then Spock comes over, and he says, Sarek says, yes, I taught him about the computer while I'm still making out with Sheehan.
He's just that good.
You want to see the flashback? You want to see the flashback to when Spock was a kid and, you know, Sarek's like showing him the inside of the computer and they're
the
like finger holding
the
whole time. And Spock's like, I thought, just make it
Mom,
stop.
Mom, Dad, please.
Make it stop, please.
I thought you were going to mention Spock walking in on Sarek and Amanda finger holding.
Finger stroking.
For the first time. And
they
have to explain it to him.
Yeah.
You see, when a man Vulcan and a woman Vulcan love each other very much, they extend two fingers.
And then they start stroking their fingers.
You go in cafes all over Vulcan, and there are these couples sitting across the table. They've got their hands, got their fingers together, sipping out of
bendy
straws.
But then you go to Vulcan Bob Jones University, and they have to keep their fingers very far away from each other at all times.
That's right. In fact, when they're in class, they actually have to wrap gauze around their fingers.
They do. Because they're like trying to touch under the tables, under the desks.
I wonder, do they have Vulcan strip clubs? Because do they have to have like a 10-foot radius between fingers at all times?
They do, yes.
Vulcan strip clubs just consist of women sitting down and like quoting philosophers and mathematical
naked
equations.
While they're like, they're holding their fingers towards you.
They're just teasing.
And you can't touch. It's like the fingers are like hovering in front of your face.
And then for a little bit extra, she might sit down and then tease you with her fingers. Sit on your lap. Well, that didn't take very long, did it, guys?
Oh, man.
No.
That didn't take very long.
Really.
Wow.
Well, I mean, come on. That's how they start this episode. From the moment we see these two, they're finger locking. It's like, dude,
they
stand
are,
up for your quarters. Damn.
Okay, so beginning of the episode, as we were talking about the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
Nobody knows anything about Spock. What's going on here?
Yeah, I thought it was very strange that Kirk knows nothing about his first officer. Because he's like, hey, you want to go down on the planet? I mean, like, and go see your parents? I mean, they didn't bother to come to your wedding that you ended up killing me at. So, I mean, like, maybe you want to go see him. And he's like, my parents are standing right in front of you.
Yeah.
And Kirk
feels like
an idiot.
Don't you
like
the look on Amanda's face? Amanda, she's so giddy. And then when Spock tells Kirk that these are my parents, and then she looks at Kirk with this huge grin, like, gotcha.
Yeah, right? Not awkward at all.
Like, you know, Archer sits down with T'Pol and Trip, and they have this great dinner conversation. You know, I feel like they do it a couple times a week. They find out about their past, their hopes and dreams for the future. I feel like Kirk just sort of takes dinner in his quarters by himself and, like, watches Netflix and just doesn't interact. Like, he talks to Bones, like, on the bridge or during his physical, and that's pretty much it. And Spock's his best friend, and just they never really discuss anything
of
subjects.
Here's a little thing between male and female, like, psychology differences, I suppose. Females like to talk a little more about each other, whereas guys tend to like to do stuff together. So they're doing things together all the time on the bridge. You know, they got to save these aliens or save the day, whatever. They're busy. So on their off time, yeah, Kirk is probably watching. It's like, I imagine on space flicks in the future, there's porn on there. Kirk is sitting down with this TV dinner from the replicator or whatever, and he's watching a little something.
Little
maybe,
rubbing fingers
maybe.
Back and forth. Yeah.
Studying Vulcan culture is what they call it.
Right.
That's what they call it, yeah. I was doing a little research for our next visit to Vulcan.
He was just prepping for this assignment.
I'm sure it's more that you know, Kirk and Bones sat down one day. Hey, Spock, tell us about your parents. No. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Fair
Maybe
enough.
Maybe so.
ask me about my parents again, and I'll kill you. All right.
Here's the thing about my relationship with my parents. You wouldn't be able to pronounce it. So let's...
There
I can't
is
even,
that.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Why bother? Yeah.
Which really makes me want to hear it now. That's all that does.
Yeah. I do like how this opening sequence ties in to the JJ film. Because, you know, we hear Sarek say, my son gave up, you know, the Vulcan Science Academy to join Starfleet. And we see it. We see the scene. Mm-hmm. And I love that right. so much.
But that's actually the JJ film tying into this episode. Unless DC Fontana is future gal that I don't know about. And she...
I mean, they tie together in the overall. I know. You know, just like Ben McCormick, Lieutenant Commander Ben McCormick of the USS Boner. I imagine I'm in the Star Trek universe. So it doesn't happen chronologically like you're talking about. You know, the scene in the JJ film took place before this. So, yes.
But it is a case of when we talk about the JJ film and people say that JJ and those guys have no respect for Star Trek. You're right. I mean, it is a case where, yes, this is picked up. The whole thing about the Academy is picked mm-hmm. up from
the why. The why you married your mother. It seemed like the logical yeah. thing to do. I mean, isn't that an exact quote
yes,
from the
is.
JJ movie? Until he says later that he's like, mm-hmm. I loved her.
Actually, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, very
yeah, because this whole episode is blown away. Like, we see the start of that schism between Spock and Sarek. And then when the disaster happens and Amanda is killed, spoilers, Sarek finally opens up to Spock and says, I really did love her. And they get this closer relationship. But we see that if that hadn't happened, Spock and Sarek would have just grown further and further apart as time went on.
So much so that Kirk wouldn't know who his parents are. So,
Yeah.
So in introducing Spock's parents here, one of the central point of this episode, what DC Fontana was going for here was to give us more background to Spock and also introduce maybe two elements, what I call the generational wall, which I see a lot myself being a parent. Not only between myself and my parents, but between myself and my son, who is a teenager now. And also the idea of being caught between cultures, which is something I can completely identify with because I am American, although I've lived almost my whole adult life in Japan. And I have a completely split identity where I'm not quite sure where I belong culturally. And those are the two central points of this episode.
Yeah.
Are you going to make your son go to Japanese Science Academy and be disappointed if he joins the army, the U.S. Army?
Sure. I don't know how that would work out, but yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Chris isn't really sure what to think of that.
I'm not sure what to think about any of that.
Well, we do know, of course, that... your wife will be fully supportive, just like Amanda, no matter what your son decides, right?
That's right. That's right.
And yeah, whether he decides or doesn't decide to do the colonar, or it's Japanese equivalent.
What would that
equivalent.
Be, Chris?
Now, I am interested in the decision they made to make Spock half Vulcan and not full Vulcan.
Yeah.
Because it kind of would have made more sense just to stick an alien on the bridge, but they ended up giving him this humanity. Like, it makes sense with B'Elanna, because I mean, yes, you can have a full Klingon, but we'd already had a full Klingon in Worf. She was sort of a different way of doing that, but Spock was our first Star Trek alien, and he wasn't even full alien. And it does give us this chance to see his two sides conflicting, but it's just, I'm amazed they thought that much through when writing the first episode to say, look, we could have him be conflicted between his
yeah,
alien
I'm
and
really
his human sides.
Really glad that you brought this up because I see so many parallels with B'Elanna Torres and Spock. They're so conflicted. And I think this episode really does explore that in several different ways. Like we've already mentioned with the parental differential. But then also you have Sarek, a full-blooded Vulcan, Amanda, the full-blooded human, and then there's Spock, the in between the two, and we see kind of a representation of, I think, what goes through his head every day. He sides a little more with logic, I think, because he went with Vulcan teachings. But there's always that little part of him, that human side, that does have that more emotional pull than what a typical Vulcan would have. So he has to deal with that. We see that happen. So, and we also get to see it interplay, too, when he's talking but with his parents as well. Sort of like ego, superego, and id. He is the superego trying to manage all of this at the same time.
Well, let's not forget that Vulcans have very, very strong emotions right. themselves, and they suppress them. So by making him half-human, it creates an even greater challenge for him to suppress those emotions. It's interesting you say we get to see a glimpse of what he's thinking on a daily basis, because when he's standing there with his parents, I mean, you could tell he's uncomfortable that his parents are on the ship. And you know that growing up, that this was a great conflict for him, an internal conflict for him. And serving in Starfleet and serving on the Enterprise allows him to be separated from that. And he's his own person. And, you know, I see that now with my son growing up, that he's 13, he's starting to develop more of his own. He wants to do his own things more than he has in the past. And so you can see as a parent the way that, you know, Amanda, especially being human in this case, could see with Spock growing up, that growing independence and that kind of search for identity going on here. Spock being on the Enterprise, though, he's separated from that, and suddenly his parents show up. And I find it interesting later in the episode when he takes command of the ship, and Amanda tells him that, you know, any qualified officer could run this ship. And Spock makes the whole excuse about, well, they could run it in normal times, right. but not right now. You know, we have 100 important people on the ship, and we've got this other ship chasing us. But he's making an excuse, right? He's still trying to escape from this conflict with his parents.
Yeah, a little bit. But then, I mean, you could argue he's just using his logical side to justify his position. He's following logic. He's just following chain of command, too.
I think it's convenient logic in that case.
Well, sure it is. But it is that nevertheless. And so for Spock, that does make sense. I mean, even Kirk says later on, wow, that's something that Spock did that. But, you know, if it were anybody else, they would just say, yeah, screw it. I'm going to help Mom and Dad here. And yeah, Chekhov, have at it, buddy.
I'm going to run this ship into the moon.
I'm going to look for the nuclear vessels.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of created drama. I feel like Spock's kind of being a drama queen just to get out of it. Like, Spock, come on. Like, seriously. This happens again, and now I'm forgetting when it is. But it's always like, yes, I know you don't want to make this small sacrifice, but all these reasons you're giving for not doing it just aren't working. Like, no one's convinced.
But we're humans. So, of course, we're going to empathize on the side of helping someone else when you're the only person who can help. So what if you have your familial, I cannot speak, differences? If any of us was put into that situation, yeah, we would do it. We would stand up to that task. But one thing I do love is in this episode, we do see just how alien Spock is and yet how human he is too. Because he really is torn. I think when he's talking mm-hmm. with his mother and then she eventually slaps him across the face and then he's just kind of left like he's grasping at the door or something like that. I think that's a very tender moment of Spock trying to deal with the aftermath of acknowledging his emotion.
Not only that, but that scene for me too, he's the first officer of this ship. But in that moment, he is like the child. We never see that. We always see Kirk and Spock in command. But in that scene, when Amanda slaps him and leaves, I see a child there at that point. Not a child because he's being slapped, but it's that's his mother standing there in front of him suddenly. It's kind of actually jarring within the context of everything else we see of Spock on TOS.
It's very true. And that brings up an interesting thought for me. What if we saw Kirk's parents or even Bones' parents coming to the ship? What would that dynamic be like? I mean, this is a very awkward thing.
It would be TNG season 7.
I want to see Chekhov's parents come on the ship because I think that would be hilarious. Take yeah.
Oh,
now
that would be
ship.
Awesome. This is true.
One thing that's never really covered on the original series is that Kirk is half Asgardian because his dad is Thor. Like, I mean, he's a child of two worlds, like not even, I mean, almost two different dimensions. I really think that should have come up at some point.
Isn't it obvious every time he takes off his shirt that he is not right. fully human, that there's something else there?
Which he conveniently does in this episode as well. I like how they're able.
In every other exactly. episode. But yeah, in here too.
Hey, oh, the Tellarite's murdered? That's unfortunate. I've got no shirt on.
People criticize Enterprise for the blue undies and, you know, trying to get people's... Archer gets his shirt off. There's even the shower scene with Archer.
Yeah.
But yet, look at TOS and how often they find a way to get William Shatner out of his shirt.
Yeah. All that was missing in this one is he wasn't in sickbay using the little leg exercise machine. I was waiting for
That's
that. I was
right.
hoping, even though I've seen this episode before, you know, come on, just do 5 seconds. That'd be great.
You know, if he had been doing his leg exercises regularly, like McCoy told him to, he could have totally taken out that Andorian before he got stabbed.
I've been attacked by an Andorian.
Yeah, he wouldn't have flubbed that wall kick.
Yeah. That's right.
That fight scene, like I said when we brought it up in Triskelion, it just comes out of nowhere. Like, they're in a nice, calm, relaxing scene. And then it cuts to the hallway, and he's already fighting.
But at least in yeah. this episode, there are Andorians on the ship who we see before it happens. In Triskelion, they're on this planet, who knows where, and suddenly this Andorian runs out and starts fighting her.
That's true.
Oh, goodness.
And I like how Kirk gets stabbed. It's a good dramatic point, but it is disappointing that, you know, ooh, a stab wound, and McCoy can't just be like, there you go.
Nope. No, he's got to put the sparkly Band-Aid on him.
Oh.
Sparkly ace bandages.
Yeah, that's what I put down in my notes. Welcome to the 23rd century, where even the bandages are sparkly.
Because you're in space and in the future.
See, we all had that in our notes.
We did. We did.
It's a sign. Sparkly bandages. Well,
I really think we should do a Trek FM feature on how to fix wounds in the different centuries, because like Phlox will put some eels on there. McCoy will put some sparkly bandages on. Crusher will let you die, but Pulaski does have her little, you know, she's got some tools. And the doctor just sort of zhub, 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 and it just heals itself. Like, I'd much rather get stabbed on Voyager than on any of these other shows.
Yeah, I think you're...
If I were going to get stabbed...
See, that should be StarTrek.com's next poll, because then even I'd be voting Voyager.
You have a legitimate reason to vote Voyager.
This is the strangest thing, but you are most likely to survive on Voyager, which is lost in space in the Delta
yes.
Quadrant. I'll be damned.
Yeah. That or Enterprise. Because, you know, even if you die, they'll just make a clone of you,
yeah.
Is a thing that they can do. So you either want to be lost in the Delta Quadrant or, you know, be the first ever Warp 5 ship.
I do like...
I'll keep that in
mind.
In
this fight scene, you mentioned this, the stabbing, though. I like how Kirk gets stabbed. There's no blood shown anywhere. The knife's lying on the floor. Mm-hmm. There's no blood on the knife. Then he goes up to touch the comm panel, pulls his hand around. It looks like he just dipped it in a giant bottle of ketchup.
Which he probably did.
There's so much blood at that point. But the knife is spotless.
Yeah. When I was watching this the other day, my wife was watching with me, and she's like, did Kirk just get stabbed? I was like, I don't think so. There's no blood. Oh, there it is.
Well, that's that safe mode. For the 60s.
And I like after that when he taps the comm panel and he says, Bridge, Spock, I've just been involved in an Andorian fight scene.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Which reminds me...
Now, he didn't push a button. He never pushes the button. He always punches
it.
True.
I love the punch.
I want one of those things from ThinkGeek just so I can punch my wall.
Kirk here.
This does remind me that the Andorians, they don't look like Andorians anymore. After Enterprise, these guys kind of look like some dude in cosplay. Like they've just gone to the Las Vegas con, and they're just in a hallway, and there's a bunch of guys in suits they built at home.
Okay, this is warning anybody who decides to go as an Andorian to Star Trek Las Vegas. I will be personally inspecting your makeup to see whether you have the original series format or the Enterprise format for accuracy.
Well, that's better than what I'm planning on doing, which is fighting every Andorian I see in Las Vegas.
Of course you're going to fight them. They're going to start the fight with you. What I like here is that even in the initial scene where Sarek is talking to Shras, I guess it is, and he looks like he's just going to kick Sarek's ass right there in that little, at that banquet.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He gets so huffy so quickly. You could tell these Andorians, they are always, you think we're joking on here about Andorians. They're always looking for a fight.
Yeah, it's absolutely
true. Go watch Journey to Babel.
That's all they care about. That's the only reason why they're there. That and for maybe some of that fruit punch, which looked really good, by the way. The blue, dyed cantaloupe. That was really nice. I wanted to try some of that.
Mm-hmm. Each one of those ambassadors in that scene were also, you know, sparkle and multicolored.
Yeah.
Like
you
the
can't
fruit.
Tell the show.
They were.
There's a purple woman in the background. I don't know what race she is or why
matter.
We never see the purple women anymore.
You can't tell at all.
Or the gold little people.
Well, the gold little people. That's something
that
yeah, I mean, apparently, I guess they weren't accepted, but apparently Willy Wonka's chocolate factory was petitioning for admission to the Federation in this episode, but we never hear about them later, so.
So regular Oompa Loompas are orange, but like their king and queen
are It's like the royalty,
gold.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I was going to say that actually Manny Koto wanted to actually put those guys in Enterprise. He called them Ithanites, and they were also going to be one of the founding members of the Federation. But they
really?
Just they couldn't get the money. This is true. They couldn't get the money to build the makeup for them and everything.
Aw, that's too bad.
They couldn't have just gotten the Tim Burton's special effects from Willy Wonka.
Well, you already have, you know, Deep Roy is already involved in Star Trek.
Yeah.
Just get him to put his Oompa Loompa makeup back on and get him in front of the camera.
Yeah, why not? Missed opportunity.
I am disappointed that would have been incredible.
That would have
been.
Oh,
yeah.
Little gold
yeah.
people.
You know what? This
except they'd be CG now.
Right.
Yeah,
CG
this
gold
is true.
People.
This is true. This episode's inspired me to make a career change, by the way, guys. I think it would be completely freaking awesome to be an ambassador. Because all you do are you go to these stupid freaking conferences, get drunk on the punch, have some negotiations, and then go to the next one. Sign
yep.
me up. That sounds
and on the way,
awesome.
You may get assassinated. I mean, you may just have your neck broken.
You may get accused of murder.
That happens sometimes, but you're accused of murder while you're on the Federation flagship. Like, you know, you could be accused of murder on your own home planet, but here you're being accused in style.
At least there's that.
It's true. And there's nice marks on the floor so you can see where to stand when people are talking
right?
to you.
Right?
Yeah,
it's also...
You don't get that at home.
It's not choreographed like that. No, it's a sham job compared to the Enterprise. So if I want a party, this is how to do it in style.
Yeah, plus if you start feeling bad, Nurse Chapel will take care of you.
So, right. See?
That's something too.
Win-win.
Should make you some Plimox soup.
I did want to see that deleted scene where Sarek and Amanda go to the sick bay, and you know Nurse Chapel's paying a little bit too much attention to Sarek, and Amanda's jealous. She just has a thing for Vulcans in general.
Yeah,
especially that part when Nurse
is?
Chapel tells Sarek, "Can I see your fingers for a minute?" And Amanda runs over there
fingers.
And starts punching Nurse Chapel.
That really put Amanda on
Get your fingers off my man, lady. Was unexpected, can I say?
Yeah.
Hey, you know.
But of course, we were all heartbroken to find out that the Andorian fight scene was a Fodorian fight scene.
Yes.
Because he was not a true Andorian.
Right.
Nope.
But a green Orion painted blue with little antenna that he actually used as antenna.
Yeah.
To contact the alien ship.
I love that, right? That they say that there's a transceiver hidden in his antenna. Like, well, of course the antenna can pick stuff up. They're antenna.
Yeah.
Especially those, because they're clearly metal
funnels.
What
else are they there for?
Right.
They don't move or anything.
But I have to ask this question. So that fight, the last fight scene when he's in the brig and he gets back and he's ready to fight, but then suddenly he's just taken out. I'm thinking, you know, he can't fight because he is a Fodorian. But if a real Andorian loses an antenna like that, do they just walk around in circles?
I hope that real Andorians' antennas don't snap off like that.
Yeah, I would hope not too.
It seems like most of them wouldn't have antenna. I fell as a child and my antenna broke off.
Have a little cast on your antenna. Yeah. Everyone in your class signs it.
Yeah. That'd be pretty hilarious.
Well, let's talk about, we were talking about the banquet scene, which, first of all, that banquet scene, is there anything that's more classic TOS than that banquet scene? All the food on the table that looks so fake, and all the colorful uniforms, and they're reusing outfits from so many past episodes. It's just the quintessential TOS scene for me.
Yeah.
And
It's a room with minimal decorations and minimal furniture.
But so colorful.
We've got, it's colorful. Everybody's wearing different colors. You know, this person's an alien because they're wearing funny clothes or, you know, painted a funny color. The food is, it's space food because it's just fruit, you know, just with food coloring on it. And that's it. It'd be really easy to do this at home. We should, at Vegas, have some colored fruit.
We ought to try that.
As we were talking about the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
This whole scene looks like it was shot at a convention. Like, everyone in the room is in cosplay.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like Journey to Babel at all. It feels like Journey to Vegas. Like, we're just filming a bunch of cosplayers walking around.
Which explains the line, I will take your blood to Vegas.
There you go.
I think that the later series missed out on that because they could have totally, you know, Voyager could have totally had a scene like this and just went to a convention like, we need 100,000 aliens, and instead of, you know, CGing different people or, you know, wearing old people makeup, they could just be like, hey, everybody with cosplay, come on in
here.
Right,
they could have gone to Star Trek The Experience.
Walk over here.
And filmed it there and gotten their footage.
Well, it's definitely how a lot of fan films get made. I mean, the Star Trek ones, certainly, but especially the Star Wars ones. Like, if you need a bunch of stormtroopers, there's the 501st Legion who will just fly out. Like, they're all over the country. A lot of them will just go. And their uniforms are amazing. Their film, their, you know, screen quality. So, yeah, that's absolutely something you could do now.
Wow.
I wonder if I could just, you know, if I'm going to a convention, like, put together a scene that I want to do, like, you know, I just want to film an Andorian fight scene, and just put out a call. Like, if you've got Andorian cosplay, be in my movie. I wonder if I could actually cast it and just shoot it all at a convention.
Let's try it at Las
you
Vegas
could probably
next
have
time.
A couple hundred Andorians.
Probably could. Probably. It's sort of like the Dark Knight Rises of Andorian fight scenes.
Yes.
I need more Andorians.
Greg is standing there with his camera. He's expecting one Andorian to show up for the fight scene. 100 of them circle him. He's like, oh, crap.
Yeah. That's like Joseph Gordon-Levitt at the front
now.
With his antenna pointed straight.
Oh, man. All right. Well, let's talk about the banquet scene a little bit more, though, because what I find interesting about this episode is that DC Fontana set out to tell us more about Spock and his family and his history. But of course, the episode needs a bit more than just that. And so they have this whole story of shuttling the diplomats to the conference at Babel and whether planets are going to get into the Federation. And by the people that are put into that room, as we've kind of been talking about, she accidentally created the mythos of the Federation and how the Federation was founded, which was then carried forward through all the series, and definitely Enterprise sunk its teeth into that and established the Tellarites and the Andorians and the Vulcans and the humans and gave us the Federation.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to read David Goodman's book, but it's basically the first 150 years of the Federation. It's basically exists because of this episode starting that seed that was picked up, of course, later on, especially by Enterprise. But yeah, it all comes back to here because before this, it was kind of nebulous. Like, what is this Federation? Who's involved? It looks just to be Earth expanded, but this is saying, no, it's actually all these different people together. It's a really cool concept, actually.
I mean, it was only like a dozen episodes earlier that they established that it wasn't a United Earth ship.
Right.
I mean, right.
It took that long for them to be like, it's a United Federation of Planets. And now we're getting our first taste of the Federation of them, like how they're all combined and they may all get along, but they're not. I mean, they may all be peaceful to each other, but they don't all get along.
Yeah, but they're trying.
And then, yeah.
Some people die in the process. Just another day.
It happens.
No big deal.
Yeah, I know they talk about Archer being the Federation's George Washington. Was there ever like a Federation Civil War where someone stepped up and was the Federation's Lincoln and kind of brought everybody back together? Or is that something that...
Yeah, John Harrison.
Right, of course. John Harrison from the Confederacy of Planets.
Confederacy of Planets.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're sounding like a separatist.
Let's not talk about that franchise anymore.
It's interesting here, though. We are thrown into this situation where we kind of accept, okay, well, yeah, these Andorians and these Tellarites and these humans and these Oompa Loompas, they're all part of this Federation. But it's never, they don't really delve into the founding of the actual Federation through the rest of TOS or even through TNG. But when we get to Enterprise and they have to do this prequel and they have to try to put us on the road towards what will become the Federation, they're able to go back to this episode and just easily pull all the pieces. And of course, you know, it's established.
But it's really
there are a few other places where we people set us on that path, but there's just so much to mine in this episode.
I mean, do we ever see Andorians or Tellarites after this point before we get to Enterprise?
Not as featured characters. You know, they show up, I'm pretty sure in Star Trek IV, there are Andorians in the hall.
Yeah.
With the president speaking. Yeah. On TNG, they create an Andorian on the holodeck. There are a few Andorians scattered here and there. But no, not like a featured thing here, except for all the fight scenes that are cut out of all the episodes. But
right, which are going back into the remastered versions.
Yeah.
I wish that they had been expanded on more before Enterprise. I wish there were more cross. I know that each series wanted its own cast of aliens, but I wish that there were more. That more aliens got expanded on. Like, we get a lot of Klingon, we get a lot of Cardassian.
Yeah.
But then we get a lot of Vulcan, but we don't know anything. I mean, I've not seen much Enterprise. I mean, I know a lot about Andorians after watching those couple episodes that I did, but...
Yeah. Well, there is that one episode with the Tellarite fight scene where he goes, I'll take, oink, your blood to, oink, Tellar.
So I'm not the only one who thought that they looked like pigs.
Well, no, you're not. I mean, it's in the episode. McCoy comes to check him out, and Kirk says, how is he? And McCoy says, he's bacon, Jim.
Oh, that's pretty good. Yeah, I have in my notes, hey, pig face, want to fight? I'm an Andorian.
But you're right, Drew. And like the Orions here, we have this whole deal about the Orion ship. And the Faldorian here is actually an Orion spy. But then we don't really pick up on the Orions much after this through Star Trek either. Of course, there's the Orion slave girl that's famous in Star Trek. But when you get to Enterprise, when Manny Koto came on, finally in season 4, they start fleshing out the Orions as well.
Yeah, I'm sure if we'd gotten to season 5, we would have seen a lot more about the Orions and the Tellarites and the... What did I say they were called? The Ithalians? These all would have been would have been much more expounded upon once we got to season 5. But I feel like all the other shows were distinctly trying to get away from all this stuff. And I'm not really sure why.
Right.
Like, TNG wasn't going to touch on it. They barely wanted to touch on the Vulcans.
Well, they wouldn't have Vulcans, yeah.
Yeah, and then DS9 wanted to do its own thing. So it was all about the Cardassians and Bajor. And then Voyager was in the Delta Quadrant. So it's like they were so much trying to get away from it. But I think as fans, we wanted to see more of this stuff. Like, tell us more about the history of the Federation. Tell us about these races that came together to create it. And let's see, you know, let's not just see, you know, people trying to take over Earth. Let's see a little about the internal strife in the Federation itself as these different groups try to get along and forge a future together.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, because we see them in the background. We know that they're there, but we don't know a whole lot about them. And with storytelling, you always need characters that you care about to make things work. So it seems a little strange that Star Trek did time and time again want to stray from the familiar, when really that could have really aided in some storytelling.
Yeah. Well, bringing it back to characters here, let's talk about Spock and Sarek a little bit, because Spock has to make the final decision to help his father. And this is a turning point for Spock as a character, I think. It's at least it does a lot to develop who he is. You know, he started out as the alien in the cage, and then even in the early episodes of TOS, Where No Man Has Gone Before, and the first 4 or 5 shot episodes, they're still playing him very much as the alien. But then he starts evolving more. We learn more about him. And Spock is a character who grew so much. By the time you get to the Undiscovered Country, he's such a different person. His whole view of the world, or the galaxy, I guess we should say in Star Trek here, changed so much. And this tug of war that he was having with his parents here, and being torn between his human side and his Vulcan side, he finally makes the decision to help his father. How do you feel about that from a character standpoint for Spock?
I think it's fantastic that he turns that corner, actually. And I love, what I really, really love, actually, even more than just that, is the way Kirk and Bones enable him. They just kind of give him enough of a nudge. Kirk kind of risks himself, his health, because he's not completely fit to go in command, but Bones lets him do it anyway, and Kirk convinces Spock to get off the bridge so he can help his father. They're working together, which is why I think they are the ultimate trio. They are making these sacrifices for one another to help each other. It's very awesome to watch this at work in this episode. It's one of the prime examples, I think.
Yeah, although in classic Shatner fashion, he's only struggling when he's trying to get Spock off the bridge. The moment Spock's gone, he's fully powered Shatner bot.
Oh, well, no, wait. Now, give him some credit, because he is, like, leaning forward in the chair.
Okay.
I heard.
I do love the character moment. Like, it does show how much Kirk cares for Spock, that he would do this. Like, he's so nonchalant in the rest of it. You know, Drew talked about him sort of just banging the wall monitors. But, you know, when it comes right down to it and he has to make sacrifices, he's going to. And, you know, people say, you know, he's not the best captain. He's the worst captain. It's times like these where you have to admit, you know, Kirk's got it where it counts.
Oh, yeah, totally.
As I say in sports ball, he really pulls it out in the clutch when it comes down to the red zone.
Something. To put the puck in the catcher's
You've really just got to. He's really just got to kick the ball through the goalposts and make a touchdown.
Score that extra point.
Yeah.
Sports ball.
Very important. Yeah, I agree. I like the interplay between all the characters and between Spock's dual character represented by his parents. I like that Spock is ready to sacrifice himself. You know, like, I'm going to donate all my blood, you know, to save my father, because it's logical, because he's a super important ambassador. But then when, you know, the ship needs him, he's like, the ship's most important. He's logical, but he's logical to what's important to him at that moment, which I think is maybe a human thing. He may not be looking at the bigger picture, just what's the biggest picture right now.
You think that's a human thing? See, I saw it the opposite way. I saw it as a much more Vulcan train of logic where my first duty is to this ship because immediately this command falls to me and I have to address the situation. Therefore, this other matter has to go aside. That's how I saw that logic fall.
Well, I'm looking at it more like the way that I see things. Wherever I am, there I am, and I focus on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I never assumed that was like a logical Vulcan thing. I assumed it was a human. Obviously, it's not. I'm human.
So you are?
Think outside the box, Landru. Think outside your own little planet of a world.
So, Char, let me ask you this. You're our Voyager editor as well. Mm-hmm. How do you think Tuvok would have handled the situation?
Ooh, very, very good question. I really do think Tuvok has such a linear form of logic that he would not have made the leap that Spock did. He would have stayed in command of the ship until Captain Janeway limps onto the bridge and orders him to save his father, say. Orders him. That's the difference, I think. Because I think Tuvok would see through Captain Janeway being injured. Like, this is a farce and you're BSing me. But she would order him and he would do it because she ordered him. But I think he's much more narrow in his train of thought, I think. Whereas you mentioned a little earlier, Spock definitely changes over the years. Very, very much. Tuvok, not so much, I don't think. What do you guys think?
That's pretty much what I think about Tuvok as well. He's very linear, his logic. It's like a tunnel vision logic. He's never able to really utilize information and make decisions that stray from that logical path. You know, it's right. Too much like, well, you have to go from A to B to C to D. You have to do it. That's why he's so good at making those PowerPoint presentations about ship operations.
This is correct. At staff meetings.
I think this is where, if we go back to the beginning of our discussion here, where we talked about how they decided to make Spock half human, not full Vulcan, giving him that little bit of humanity, even no matter how much they suppress it in certain stories, does give him that ability to stray from logic in a way that works for us as the viewer, and maybe we even cheer him on. In that case, that he
yeah,
is
well, that
is,
that's a good question for everybody. Like, who was cheering for Spock to help Sarek as this was going on, or did you side with Spock and say, "Well, no, his first duty is to the ship," and sorry, Dad.
I think that anybody could have handled, you know, the half injured, half dead Kirk. You know, was able to save the ship. I mean, not that Spock knew that. I mean, anybody could have taken care of that situation. But I think that I don't know. I wanted him to save his dad.
Yeah, I think as fellow humans, we are cheering him to help his father. Because I don't remember who says it, but somebody says, well, get Scotty. He'll take care of us, no problem. And I was thinking, yeah, come on. Get Scotty up there. This will be just freaking fine. Get out of here, Spock. Once that was said, I was like, okay, come on, Spock. Go, Spock. Go, Spock. You know what you need to do, Spock. Come on, buddy. And I'm rooting for him to help Sarek. I'm understanding where Spock is coming from as a Vulcan, but damn it, dude. Come on. Yeah, I want you to make that leap. I want you to appeal to, or let your emotional side appeal to you just a little more to help you do this.
I think it's an important question in this episode that, of course, if your father needed your help to survive, naturally you're going to help your father. I mean, that's what we do as people. What's interesting here is that Spock and his father are estranged and they have this uncomfortable relationship that goes back to their childhood. So then the question becomes, Would you do the same thing for a parent who you've been estranged from for most of your life compared to a parent who you've been close to for most of your life? And, you know, I have a situation where I'm estranged from a parent for a very long time, almost the same amount of time that's mentioned in this episode, which is a connection for me, you know, but I have to think that ultimately, you know, they're a family member, and I certainly could never put, especially not in this situation, I couldn't say, well, the ship is my first duty, because of course, like you point out, there's Scotty there, but forget Scotty. I mean, these people are all officers on the flagship of Starfleet at this point. They're all trained to take over in an emergency. You have to assume that at any time your commanding officer could be killed and you have to take over. As much as we laugh about Chekhov's hair or whatever, he's a competent Starfleet officer. He could jump in, he could take over. So
right.
It's an easy decision. I think the case of being estranged, like how do you react to a family member who you've been estranged from for decades? It is a question that's asked here.
Yeah, I'd like to believe that I'd go back and, you know, give my dad a blood transfusion if he needed one. Like, surely there's things like sickness that cross, you know, that knock down some of these barriers, that even if you haven't talked for years, even if there's a big argument that hasn't stopped, surely when something like this happens, you can see past those petty differences and, you know, actually go and help them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, come to think of it, I can relate to this situation more than I even realized. My biological father and I don't talk very much. He was not involved in my life a whole lot growing up. But if push came to shove, if I was the one and only person out there who could help him in a situation like this, yeah, I could set aside those differences and help him because he's still a human being. So, I don't know, that's all it really takes for me.
Yeah, I don't have a situation like that I can compare to, thankfully. But I'd like to think that I would, even for a stranger, do something like that. I mean, if I was the only person who could help.
Here's a question. Would it be easier to do it for a stranger?
Hmm.
Because
that's
I think,
really good question.
In
yeah,
a way,
a
it is.
Question.
You don't have all those feelings in the back of your mind. That guy's a real a-hole. I really don't want to do this, but I'm going to. Whereas if you don't know the person, you're like, yeah, I have a kind heart. I'm going to help you.
Well, you had Worf refusing to help that Romulan, right? That was the plot line. So, you know, there's a case where I do understand it's not family. It's somebody that you have a beef with. Some might say a legitimate beef. But a case of just a stranger, like if it was just another random Klingon, I'd like to think that Worf would have helped him out. I'd like to think I would if given that opportunity.
Well, in the case of Worf, he definitely would, I think, because that would be the honorable thing to do in their society as well, right? And I think that's, in our society, that's the correct thing to do would be to help, even if it's a stranger, if you can help, and it's not going to mean, you know, the end of your life or your family, most certainly you would be willing to help. And in many situations, even if it did mean like the end of your life, there are those situations where you step in as well.
But we're humans.
Right, that's true.
Yeah, we're not going to let command get in the way. We're going to take that time off from work, dang it.
Yes, we are humans and we don't have T-negative blood.
No.
Yes. Speaking of blood, I did want to point out a little detail that I noticed this go-through that I had not noticed before. In the blood transfusion machine between them, Spock is plugged into one and he's got light green blood.
Yes.
And then in the middle, there's like a red reservoir with blood in it. Yeah. And then the one going to Sarek is dark green.
Yes, yes.
So like, even though they're both Vulcan and we always talk about he's green-blooded and stuff, it's not the same green blood. I thought that was a neat little detail.
Maybe that's
that they
part
added.
Of the filtering out the human factors that they were doing.
That's what I assumed it was. Sort of like a little plasmish machine. You know, you take your blood in, removes the plasma, and then takes.
So you think that was the blood going back into Spock that was light green?
No. I think that was what was going to Sarek.
Maybe his blood is lighter to start with.
Yeah.
Can you filter out the human blood out of Spock's blood?
Well, that's what they said they were going to try to do. Yeah.
Man, I think we're stretching things a little bit there. I believe we can take elements of it, but the idea that there would be like a bucket of red blood left over after they filter it out, that's stretching things a bit.
They do say that they're taking the human elements out of it, but there is totally a thing of red blood in between. Yeah. Spock goes in, Sarek goes out.
It's a visual representation of what's going on.
Okay, all right.
Well, actually, it's just a complete mistake in set design, but yes, I
Hey, maybe the thing that they use to take the human elements out is just a red liquid.
Oh, okay.
It's cranberry juice,
who knows?
Actually. You know, like cranberry juice is really good
for... That's what takes out the human elements.
No, cranberry juice, it's really good for kidney stones, you know? It's also good for removing the human elements from Vulcan blood if you happen to be half human.
Who knew?
So Spock shouldn't binge on cranberry juice or he'll just become full Vulcan. He'll just,
and Bones is more of a medical genius than I knew.
He'll implode.
It also helps that we're being sponsored by Ocean Spray, apparently.
We are.
Promotional consideration by Ocean Spray.
Yeah, Vulcan pomegranate juice, also in light.
but the line about the human elements, I think it was a good one when Sarek says that I'm T negative, it's very rare, and Spock says, well, I'm T negative, and McCoy says it won't work, and Spock says, well, there must be a way to filter out the human factors. And I think there, too, can take that as not talking about the blood, but talking about this whole situation that Spock is trying to wrap his mind around helping his father here, because it does come down to the human factors in Spock versus the Vulcan factors. So I thought it was good.
Very much.
A good line by Fontana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she does a lot with this episode. All these things that we talked about, she set the stage for so many things. Go DC.
She really,
Fontana.
She did. Yeah.
My favorite part would be the end where Spock's laid up in bed and Kirk's laid up in bed. They're trying to talk and McCoy's is like, shut up.
Yes.
I finally get the last word.
Yes. It's one of the two instances.
He's so happy because he finally gets his mutiny.
Finally.
Like he's finally in command now. Him and Scotty forever.
Yeah.
Oh man. We could
made it.
We could do some t-shirts, and you guys could write some fan fiction right there.
Oh, yeah.
You know
Bones
it.
Bones and Scotty forever. See it right now.
That's the title right there.
A lot of finger stroking.
Maybe. I think we ought to get on that.
That's what we call full circle, ladies and gentlemen.
Which is a Star Trek novel, though. We can't infringe upon that.
That's true. Not only does Bones get the last word here, but as serious as this episode is throughout, it is TOS, and it does end with a final comedic moment.
Yep, you've got to have the...
I think it's deserved.
Yeah.
I think it's really deserved in this episode, and it's well done, and it's not like making fun of somebody, which it sometimes is. Like, oh, Spock... You're like a computer.
No, it's like, oh, Spock, you light green-blooded bastard.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I like Bones' style, too. He just tells him, shut up! And then that's it. He wins. Yeah,
and they fly
you know,
off into space.
He deserved to win this one because the poor guy, I mean, let's face it, he's bitching in almost the whole part of this episode, except when he learns about Spock's teddy bear. His little pet. Mm-hmm. A teddy bear? I mean, his eyes light up so much. It amuses me because my cat's name is Teddy. And so whenever I hear something Teddy, I'm like, oh, a Teddy. And so when Bones lights up, I'm like, that's probably me right there.
Yeah. I think Greg's eyes always light up when I say Teddy also. But
they just did.
For a completely different reason, yes.
Reasons we'll get into on the other side of the room.
I like that McCoy is pestering Spock's mom for, like, ammunition, for, like, dirt on Spock.
Yes. Yes, he really
and
is.
And she feeds it to him by telling him about...
Yeah, okay.
This, where describing this like saber-toothed tiger thing as kind of a teddy bear is really... It's a bad thing to describe. It's like, oh, no, it's not a teddy bear because it's alive and has 6-inch fangs. It's like, so it's not like a teddy bear then.
Not at all.
Oh, maybe purrs. I don't know.
But teddy bears don't purr. They're stuffed animals.
Well, yeah, but they're cute and cuddly. Never mind the fangs. Maybe they're just very gentle, loving creatures nonetheless.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm pulling at straws here, people.
Trying to make Amanda not be a liar. I see how it goes.
Something like that. Yeah, I'm on her side.
All right, guys. Well, we are hitting an hour, so why don't we wrap up our discussion of Journey of Babel with some final thoughts. I've got a couple of things that we didn't mention, but Landru, why don't you kick us off with your final thoughts?
My final thoughts would be that this is a really well-rounded episode of the original series. It's something that every Star Trek fan should see because it lays the groundwork for this past history that you see in Enterprise. It's got random fight scenes. It's got space battles, but it's also got Spock and his dad talking and Amanda and Spock talking. Really well done, well written, well acted scenes. And it's just really good all the way around.
Well, I think this episode really helps cement why DC Fontana was integral to the success of Star Trek. I think without her there, we wouldn't have the deep history that we have. We wouldn't have a lot of these emotional things about Spock that we learn. It's just episode after episode, hers are the ones that are classic Star Trek shows. So I just love Journey to Babel. It's one that I will watch. You know, if I'm sitting down to watch an episode of Star Trek, I will either pick Journey to Babel or a couple other ones, or I'll pick some random ones. So I end up seeing this one about 1 in 4 TOS episodes. It's really good. It's just that good.
So a quarter of the time, Greg is watching Journey to Babel.
Pretty much. I'm not actually exaggerating there.
Wow. It is a very good episode. It has a little bit of everything. It's got action. It's got very rich character development because we're learning so much about Spock and his conflicted nature. And we get to meet Sarek and Amanda. And I thought Mark Leonard and Jane Wyatt were absolutely fantastic. They really pulled this off. And you've got the great stuff going on with Kirk, Bones, and Spock helping each other out, making things work so we can have the happy ending. And I think that says a lot about who those characters are and the sacrifices they will make for one another. And that's one of the things that I think a lot of fans love about classic Trek. So this is a must see. I noticed you guys didn't rate, but I'm going to give it 4.5 fruit punch alien cocktails.
Okay. I was actually going to give it 9 out of 10 sea lots.
Mm.
I was going to give it 8 out of 9 Vulcan ambassadors.
All right. It's a great point about the characters, and I think that's the key to this episode. We remember this episode so much because the Andorians are in here and the Tellarites are in here. And it just, this episode, like I said, it's like the quintessential TOS for me. But what I love about it is that it really is about the characters. DC Fontana wrote a story that really delves into Spock. It delves into relationships. And yet it has all this other great stuff in it for us as well. What I find interesting about it is that they blew basically the entire budget for this episode on the Andorian costumes.
Yeah.
And yes. Sometimes on here we've talked about how we never see Vulcan. We went to Vulcan in Amok Time, and that we never really see Vulcan again until Enterprise when we get to the Forge and that three-parter. And Fontana did want to have a scene on Vulcan in this episode, but they couldn't afford, you know, to do the painting to show Vulcan. And they talk about how even the fact that Sarek and Amanda arrive by shuttlecraft instead of beaming over to the ship was again done because there was no money to do a transporter effect, because they spent all the money on these Andorian costumes and a few other elements in the show. But yet, wow, they made such an amazing story out of this with almost no money. They reused shuttle footage from the Galileo 7 to bring Sarek and Amanda over. They dispensed with the scene from Vulcan. And it's what we would, of course, refer to in the later series as a bottle show. I never think of TOS shows as being bottle shows for some reason. It's the later series when I know that they have the money to actually do the sets and go to different places. Then when they stay on the ship, that's when I really think of those. But in this case, it's so limited where the action takes place here, and they tell such a good story. It really highlights the strengths of Star Trek. And so I'm going to give this episode 9 Andorian transceiver antenna. So that's Journey to Babel, everyone. Before we go, Landru, tell everyone where they can find you around the internets.
They can find me on Twitter at 005, and they can find me on the Observation Lounge, where I don't co-host with Greg. Not at all.
All right. How about you, Char?
All right. Well, you can, of course, find me all over Trek FM, and you can find me on Twitter at OhTheProfanity. And you can find me on To The Journey.
To the journey!
Hey, very good. Like it. With Lori and Tristan.
You're just being nice to us, Char. We know it sucked.
No, it was really good this time. I mean it. You were in sync.
It's because Landru's here.
Is that it?
It usually sucks when Greg and I try to do it, but Landru really pulled us through.
Landru levels it
He's
out.
He's got
huh?
us linked with the hive mind, is what's going on.
Oh, yes. He is of the body.
All right, guys. Well, wow. Thanks for joining us. It was a fun discussion.
No problem.
Thank you.
Well, I said on the other side of the room that I might not have that much to say about Journey to Babel, but I ended up having a little bit to say. But especially you guys, I think that was a really fun feature. Especially, I love talking about Andorian fight scenes whenever we can. So I only can hope that there will be more episodes of Star Trek in the future that feature Andorian fight scenes.
I think the next series should just focus on that. That should be the central theme of the next series.
It's been a long time fighting these Andorians.
That would be great. That would have been perfect for UPN to have a show like that, because they could have really cross-promoted the wrestling and the Andorian fighting.
Yeah, I mean, you think there's a lot of Andorians at Enterprise? Wait till you see Jeffrey Combs on WWF SmackDown.
He is everywhere.
That's going to catch a lot of ratings. All right. Well, anyway, let's tell everyone where they can find us. Well, anyway, let's tell everyone where they can find us if they want to share their thoughts on Journey to Babel, feisty Andorians, or the sexual practices of Vulcans, which apparently we covered extensively on this episode, which we weren't planning to do. But, you know, Char was on, so Landru knew what he was getting into. That's
he
all
did,
I can say.
Yes.
Go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. You can choose to send a message to a show. Choose the Ready Room, and that message will come to me and to Greg. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. You can find us on Google Plus at hyperchannel/TrekFMGplus. And you can find us on Twitter under username TrekFM, where all four of us from today's show actually are the four who tweet from that account. So chat us up there. And Greg, what if people want to find you?
Well, they can definitely find me on Twitter at Greg Harbin, where I am probably going to be done talking about sports ball until the baseball season starts. So basically follow me talking about Mass Effect and as I watch the rest of the Best Picture nominees, which relates to also you can find me on the Observation Lounge, where we do a wrap-up of the week in geeky news with Drew as well as Catherine Bryan, and usually a special fourth chair. And this week we talked pretty much about Ben Affleck for 2 hours. So check it out.
Great. And if you want to find me, my username is C. Brian Jones. That's on Twitter and pretty much everywhere else in social media. And that's Brian with a Y. And also, I did want to plug, of course, I always plug Literary Treks at the end of the Ready Room, where Matthew Rushing and I talk about books and comics and we interview authors. We had a great time yesterday. We sat down for well over an hour with David Mack and talked Star Trek novels, and that'll be coming out in a couple of weeks. The show that's coming out right around the same time as this Ready Room is one where we sat down with James Swallow. So that was a very interesting one also. But beyond that, we have a new show that we just kicked off a couple of days ago called The Orb.
And The Orb
is... The Orb! Now, The Orb is the same format as To the Journey, except it's all about Deep Space Nine. I just don't get to talk about Deep Space Nine enough on The Ready Room because it takes us 5 or 6 weeks to come back around to it. So we now have a new 30 to 40 minute show dedicated to the minutiae of Deep Space Nine. So you can find that over at trek.fm/TO for The Orb. And that's Matthew and myself, again, sitting down together. We're going to have other people come in as well, third chair, week to week, and talk about all sorts of different topics. The first one, we give our first impressions of DS9, thinking back to Emissary when it premiered, and the things we love about the show. The next one, we're going to talk about the characters, and then we're going to start delving into some more specific topics. So go check that out.
Very cool.
And Greg, we also want to thank our sponsor, Squarespace, and encourage all of our listeners to go over and check out the amazing tools. Again, whether you want to build a personal blog or you want to build a full-blown website, or even if you're a developer and you have a massive project for your clients, you can do it all with the power of Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com/trek and use offer code TREK1 for January to get 10% off of your Squarespace site. All right, Greg. Well, I guess that's another Ready Room in the bag. I'm going to wander off to the banquet hall because I heard that the Oompa Loompas are hosting a poker game tonight.
All right, Chris. I think it's time to stick some Vulcan finger gauze in it because the Ready Room is done.